everybody, and welcome back for another episode of Miss Nyagin Iskoyak. My name is Kayla, and we are the Bookwomen, and I am here with the rest of the Bookwomen.
I am Bookwomen, I don't know, number two. My name is Tanya, and we have Bookwomen number three, that is.
I complete the trilogy. I am Sheila.
Oh, you are Return of the Jedi.
Oh, no. Yeah.
We are the anti-trilogy. It is the anti-trilogy up in this place. Like, yeah. Really, you have all the three different antis combined. And then when you just, like, shove us together, we are the ultimate anti.
Yeah.
It's morphin' time, and we all put our hands in. God. We turn into, like...
Yes.
This giant settler dominator.
Oh my God, Settler Dominator. I just like had this like this trilogy, sexy, baby, like you know that mythical creature that's like a dog with like three heads?
Cerberus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but like aunties, like in a dominatrix with like three heads. Can someone draw that? Can a listener draw that? I'll give you a free book.
Draw three heads.
As soon as you said like Settler Dominator, like my head went into the gutter like immediately. Like
I like how we all just immediately thought of like sexy bondage.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Obviously.
This pandemic's rough.
I feel like there is a graphic novel in the making here though, just saying.
Yeah.
Any artists out here, we can make the narrative.
Hit us up. All right, so this episode is our first actual kind of book club-esque episode. Today is the official day, and we will be talking about Split Tooth.
Yay,
so exciting.
It is exciting, but before we jump into our conversation, we definitely want to give a content warning for this one. So we do have a content warning listed on our website, and I'm just going to read off of it. It said, readers should know that Split Tooth is a work of staggering beauty and originality that also engages with extremely challenging subjects, including childhood sexual abuse. And that's actually within the first 30 pages. So please take care of yourself while you are reading the book, listening to the book, listening to our podcast, all of that fun stuff. If at any point you feel yourself triggered, visit our website. We have tons of mental health resources, hotlines, text places, because I know that sometimes you don't always want and are able to talk to a person. So texting is a really good alternative. So check out our website. Take care of yourselves, please.
Thanks, Tanya. And also, we're going to be talking about the book. So, like, if you haven't read it, this is your spoiler alert. Like, duh. We're talking about the content of the book. So
we are. So yeah. For all of you listeners, I don't know if you two remembered your homework that I gave you. Do you remember the homework?
Yes.
It was to bring a grounding thing. And I totally... If you didn't see, because we do have a Zoom on, which we don't show our lovely faces to our listeners. I didn't know if y'all were looking at me being like, looking at the ground, looking around, being like, what can I grab? I see a cat toy on the other side of me. So I'm just going to reach over and grab it. And my cat's toy will be my grounding agent today.
I'm straight up going to go to the other room because I suck. One moment, I'll be back.
Now I'm left here alone with my grounding object. So while they're grabbing those things, I will talk a little bit about grounding. There's a bunch of different ways that you can ground yourselves. I know that living in Edmonton, there's lots of Cree folks living around here, and oftentimes what they do to ground themselves is smudging and using sage. And I find that whenever I light sage, the smell of it just brings me back to the earth. And you know, sometimes when I just feel so dislodged, I feel my tailbone just start to ache, and then I'll just take a walk outside and it'll be poof, gone. So for grounding, this is what happens. Like, grounding is really good when you get triggered. So when you get triggered, you almost like I started thinking about it as like time traveling. So you turn into a time traveler and you go into a past scene or memory or anything like that. And sometimes grounding yourself, holding on to something, or petting a pet, you know, smudging anything to get you back into the present is a really good thing. So grounding objects can be anything and everything. I've seen people use eagle feathers, like if you hold an eagle feather and then what is it? What's the word for that? I don't want to say pet, but they like stroke the eagle feather. Because sometimes, you know, when the feather is all disjointed, if you spend some time just putting it back together, that puts a different focus on your mind. And then it can take you out of that, out of the past, really. For me, the grounding object that I brought, and you two are going to laugh because you see me in my video, but I brought this.
Aww. Is it a cow?
It's yeah, a cow. So I brought my stuffy. So this is my stuffy. Her name is Moo Moo. I have had her since I was a child. And this has basically been my best friend since I was a child. I was a very isolated child. I had a lot of really severe childhood depression. So I always had a stuffy around me. And for some reason, whenever I was upset, I would cuddle her and she would absorb all of my negative emotions and negativity. So she's pretty rough around the edges. She's gone through surgery quite a few times. But yeah, this is my grounding object that I'm going to be holding her close to me during this conversation in case at any time that I get triggered. Do you two have any special objects or just some found things that you've laying around?
Go ahead, Kayla.
So I just moved yesterday. So my house and life is a little bit of a small nightmare for finding things. So normally when I'm at work, or mostly at work is when I find that I need to ground myself and not just, you know, rage or anything. I normally have a rock on my desk that I picked up. And it says Indigenize the Academy on it. And I always said that one day I was going to throw it through a window at university, but it's nice. This really smooth, really round rock. And it's actually it was a joke that became something that I actually play with. And I normally roll it in my palm. But for today, I do not have my awesome rock because it's probably in a box with all my office supplies. So today I am holding a white cat toy. It is a pollock fish. It smells, I actually like the smell of catnip. So I'm just maybe I'll smell it. And my cat is looking at me excuse me, ma'am, that is mine. As I'm waving it around in the air.
Your cat might just attack you in the middle of this.
Yeah, that could happen.
All right, Sheila, what do you have?
So everyone has seen me wear this. It's my moonstone ring that I've had forever. I usually wear it pre-COVID. I've worn it for I got it in 2011 in Saskatoon there was a jewelry store on Broadway that it used to be the Living Room, which was a old coffee shop and then it was a jewelry store. And then it was a more high-end store. And then it became a jewelry store and gemstone kind of jewelry store. Anyway, that's what I have. I've had it for a very long time. I used to always wear it and kind of play with it when I would get annoyed or bored or mad or whatever. And so it does have a lot of my old energy into it. I'm looking at it right now actually, and it's a lot. It used to be in a lot better condition. I don't know how this happened. The silver part of it just got real nasty, and I stopped wearing it as soon as I moved back to Saskatoon because that was March 11th 2020, the day the WHO declared a global pandemic, and then we were all fiercely washing our hands, and I was how you if you wear a ring you're it's harder to dry. Anyway, I just like took it off. And so it's like, this is like the first time that I've like had it in my hand in about a year. So this is kind of like cool.
Surreal. And
it is surreal. And like, when I've like seen psychics before, and they have requested, like, give me an object that's like got your energy in it, I was like, oh, there's no doubt in my mind, it's this ring. And so, yeah, this is the ring.
Perfect. So we've got some tools already for this conversation.
Yeah.
I have some other ideas that I'd like to pull out later on, but I think we should jump into this book. You two ready?
Yes.
Okay. How did you end up reading, or did you end up reading it or listening to it?
I did both.
Which one did you like better?
You know what? I think it all depends really for me, like if you're one of those people that really like audiobooks or you don't like audiobooks. Like I like usually physically picking up a book and reading it. I did appreciate the audiobook because it was like a lot easier, especially because of working like crazy job. It was a lot easier to just have the audiobook on in the background, but I don't think I liked one or other better for this. Usually I'm like, oh, I like this better. But for this one, I actually appreciate both of them because they are so different.
Yeah. I read the book. I like read the book like when it first came out in 2018. I got it from the library. And so like I remember it from then, and it was like a very impactful book then. And so I listened to it this time as a recommendation from you, Tanya, because I didn't know that the audiobook, like Tanya Chagak does like some throat singing and like she reads her book. So it is like a different experience, I guess. So this time I listened to it. And I think like, listening to an audiobook is reading. Like if you don't think that, like,
this is not the right podcast for you.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. Yeah, I was like, it was that harsh, but it's true. It's just like there's no debate. Like, is listening to an audiobook reading? Yes, done. So this time I accessed the material through the audio format. How about you, Tanya?
At first, I tried to listen and read at the same time, but I started noticing that the audio actually jumps around a little bit. So it doesn't line up exactly with the book, which made things very difficult and confusing for me. I mean, if you're listening to one or reading it by themselves individually, you probably would have no idea, but reading them and listening to them at the same time was like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah. So
I would be reading along with it and it would end this poetry section. And then all of a sudden it would jump into some other thing. And then it would just go, it seemed like it would go off on this tangent for 20 minutes and then jump back to the next chapter, which I found really, really confusing. So I just gave up on that idea and then decided just to listen to it for the rest of the way. If I had to choose, I mean, the audiobook is so impactful and you can hear and feel the entire experience and the emotions and the way that she sets it up. It's almost like you're listening to, I don't want to say nightmare, but it's like nightmarish, you know, it's creepy.
Yeah.
But like reading the book, you can distance yourself a little bit better, especially if you have a history of child abuse. Like, I think that would be better for you to read it instead of listen to it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. I was talking to Eric, my partner, the other day about how we all read books in our head And he was like, what? And I'm like, yeah, you know, when you're reading a book, you sometimes read characters with voices, like, or that's something that I do. I read characters with voices. And I was just saying to him, like, in The Hobbit, I always read Smaug as a woman, even though with a female voice, even though it never says what the dragon's voice is. So when reading Splittooth, in my head, it was a lot lighter. Like, I was reading it like a child, with like a child's demeanor. But when I was listening to the audiobook and Tanya herself is actually narrating it, it's a lot more, not scary, but it's very dark. Like, her voice seems very dark. It does have lighter moments to it, but even the chapter break of like the throat singing, and if our listeners have never heard throat singing before, definitely look it up. It was more impactful. It was a little bit more deep. I feel like sometimes we, in our own like subconscious mind, we can gloss over sections that are a little bit more traumatic to us, whereas this was more in your face and impactful. Yeah, it was a definite different experience. I loved both of them. I had never read it before, surprisingly. I know some people, I think Sheila, you said you had read it before. So
yeah,
so I'm very happy. I do really like the illustrations though. And that's one thing that I missed, is that actually in the book there are illustrations, and I really like them. And that's the one thing that you miss in an audiobook, is seeing the illustrations.
Seeing the illustrations and knowing and seeing the different ways that she presents, it's a mixed bag of prose and poetry, right?
Yeah.
So when you're listening to it, you miss out on the fact that it's a poem, and you're like, wait,
right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, totally.
But it's so raw. I think the word that you were looking for is raw.
Yeah.
Gut-wrenchingly, like, just here it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, it's kind of funny, like, so like listening to the audiobook at home, like, I have two cats, Abby and Alana, and like when the throat singing comes on, and they would just be like, what the fuck, like, what's happening, you know, and like then start like running around, because it's like so scary, especially like two little dum-dums, you know. It's like, what is this? And it is like kind of like a everybody freak out, it's a nightmare, you know, kind of a vibe.
Yeah, so we actually have a few listener questions. We are thinking that we're going to keep them all anonymous just because we, you know, we're librarians. We like to maintain people's privacy. So the first question that we have here is, where is the best place to read or listen to Splittooth for you? Let's start, Kayla.
Okay, so for me, just because of the content of the book, I really, you know, I do like when traveling, not that we're traveling right now, but I was like, oh, an audiobook, this would be great if you're like in the car, even for my partner, as he was moving out here, I was like, yeah, listen to it on the plane, like when you're flying out here. But then I was like, how would I handle reading or listening to this on a plane? So I was like, you know what, sitting in my living room writing policies, this was definitely one of those books where, as I was listening to it, being at home probably was the best for me, just because of, you know, there was a few times when I definitely choked up and got pulled away from my work, and then was like, oh, that was just like heart-wrenching, and had to take a moment to like stop doing what I was doing, grab coffee. So for me, just because of like the content and how impactful some of it was for me, being at home was probably the best place for this book. I don't know. How about you guys?
I listen to audio like all the time. I'm more of a podcast person than an audiobook. I obviously have nothing against audiobooks. It's just like the way I like choose my audio entertainment, I guess. But like, it's been really cold here in Saskatoon, and like listening to Tanya Tagak like describe the cold while I'm in my car, like bundled up and like a heater on my butt, and like, you know, and like watching like all of the exhaust from all the other cars, you know, like rise kind of like silently, you know, how, you know, when you're like stopped at a stoplight and like like there's no air movement because it's so cold, and like the brightness, and like you're bundled up in all of your stuff, and like the heaters like blasting everywhere it can. And like then she's like describing like how bitterly cold and dark like the north is, and I'm like, yep, this is an immersive experience. Yep. Even though I've never been north, like north, like real north. I like get it, because like when you live in the prairies, there's nowhere for the northern air, like the Arctic air, to go. Like there's no mountains blocking it, so it just like comes down and like goes straight into your fucking face. And yeah, and we still live here for some reason. But yeah, so my car when it's cold. How about you, Tanya?
I don't want to overcomplicate this question, but I'm going to complicate this question. So reading this book was a very different experience for me, because I am a sexual assault survivor. And so I knew what the content was going to be. So I kind of put up some boundaries for myself, just for my own mental well-being, that I knew for sure I did not want to read it or listen to it in a car in case I got triggered, because I have been behind the wheel when I've been triggered before, and it's scary. Like, I can't even like see the road signs or something. Like, it's a very dangerous situation, actually. Like, I've gone through like red lights and stuff like that before. So I, you know, choosing the safe route and not listening to it in my car. I've also, like, because I have kids at home, I didn't really listen to it or read it like around my children, because I didn't want them to hear any of it. So I found myself most often reading and listening to it with my headphones on and hiding under like my blankets as I'm like reading it. You know, like when you're a kid and you're reading a spooky story and you're kind of make a little tent for yourself. Yeah, it's kind of what I did, because there is a few moments in that book. Like there's one poem that I read it or I listened to it to, and it just made me want to throw up. Ugh, I had such visceral reactions to this book. Like I couldn't do it in a single sitting. I had to take several takes at it. It was a hard read for me, but some parts were harder than others, obviously. But yeah, I found the best place for me was hiding under my covers like a child.
That's nice though. Like
it's a safety thing, like being under your covers, and it's just like, yeah, is really nice.
And I think it is nice that, like, you know yourself so well and, like, have done so much healing that it's, like, you just know, like, oh, hey, like, I need to be comfy as fuck and, like, and just, I think it's...
Yeah, all that being said, like, considering my healing journey, I am super proud of myself for actually reading this book in its entirety. And, like, I only had one visceral reaction, and it didn't trigger me to my own stuff. So that was really good. So I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. Yay.
Hell yeah.
I did the thing.
Yeah.
So I feel good about that.
Good. Good.
Perfect. Do we have any other listener questions?
Yes, I have one right here. So in our previous podcast episodes, we've talked about how we all kind of grew up in small rural Indigenous communities. And this is where this book takes place, in a small rural Indigenous community. Does any of the book resonate with your childhood and your transformation growing up in a small community? Or did anything kind of bring you back to growing up in a small town when reading it?
Yes. Oh my God.
I had so many. I was like, good and bad reactions.
Yeah. So my first like bad reaction, so there's several times where several teachers are like doing fucked up things, and to say the least about that situation. And like, oh yeah, That's a thing that's very common in small towns, and like very just like known as like a thing to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, I think my first kind of like jump, like negative reaction that brought me back to being like a scared kid living in a small town was in the chapter where they are rowing across the pond on the little boat. And for me, I was reading that and in my head, I was just like, no, like stop. Because growing up in a small community, you know, kids drowned in dugouts, they drowned in ponds, lakes, doing dumb things. And we were definitely those kids that like, you know, the pond is barely frozen and we're trying to walk across it. And it just as an adult, just knowing how dangerous that is, especially the sloughs and dugouts. But reading that, I was like, oh, no, especially when she's talking about how he's getting like blown out farther into the lake and can't make it back. And I was just like slowly panicking about this kid being on this lake. I was like, no, like, don't do it. Dumb.
Like, yeah, that's actually why, like, our family, we have a lot of ghost stories that revolve around the lake that we used to live by. So in St. Ambrose, we have the beach, which is actually, I think it's a historical site now, but we have a lot of stories of kids going out late at night and then ghosts kind of attacking them. I think it was just to kind of ward people away from the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, there's always those things. Like, I don't... Yeah, my mom used to tell me that things lived in the dugout and would come up from underneath and like grab me and pull me down to try and get me to stop swimming on it or anything like that. Or even in the horse troughs, my dad used to tell me that like I would get magneted to the bottom of them. Like, I don't know why as a kid I wanted to swim in the horse trough, but you know, that just seemed like a good place to do it.
Like, yeah, that's stagnant water.
Yeah.
Not so good.
Farm kids, you got to make your own fun doing whatever. I mean, so the one part of the book where I actually had like this amazing reaction and I had to like stop listening, put it down, and I called my best friend who we've been friends for at least 31 years just to tell her how much I missed her since we've been separated. And the part is on page 96 and it says it's when they're in the classroom and they're being little shitheads and they're causing trouble. And it says, my best friend and I were separated in every class because we cannot keep a straight face and stay quiet. She's like a battery pack for my rebel machine. And that is exactly me and my best friend, Abby. We were separated in every class. And it's like when the two of us get together, it's just like chaos will ensue, but like fun and amazing chaos. So I had to call her and be like, I miss you so much and I love you so much after reading that. Because it just brought me back to being a kid and just like creating trouble and having the teachers throw like whiteboard markers at us because that's how they would get us to pay attention, just by like throwing it. And then it like made us remember how every time Abby was getting in trouble, the whiteboard pen would come flying towards her, but always miss and hit me when I wasn't doing anything. So it was like that, just like funny, like bringing you back to being like those good, good memories as in me getting hit by whiteboard markers, which I mean, teachers should not be throwing markers at students, but like, yeah, right? That was like a great memory, a good childhood memory that was not children drowning on notes.
Ooh, you know, like thinking about my childhood memories, I guess my childhood memories that got stirred up reading this book is actually a really nice segue into the next listener question about relationality and how was relationality depicted in this story. So I think the chapter that stood out to me the most was when she talks about when she was little and how she would like have this little, was it a newt or a lizard or something? And how she would like put it and tuck him into her mouth and how he would just like hang out there.
Yeah.
I just reminded me of being such a weirdo kid, you know? And I used to do like, not to that extent, but I used to imagine, like I had the craziest imagination. I think it was just to blot out the rest of my life or something. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I was a part of the running club, and I used to imagine that whenever I would be running, all of the trees and the plants and animals around me would just be cheering me on. And you know how branches kind of like overhang on some of the sidewalks? I would put my arm out and give them high fives as I like ran by them at like 7 a.m. during running club. And I used to think I was so awesome. It's so cool. But in reality, I was in my own, my own little dream world, but it was really fun. And that just reminded me of that. Cause I was kind of weirded out by that chapter, but also like, that's kind of sweet that this creature trusts this little girl enough to go inside of her mouth and hang out and like leave unscathed, you know?
Yeah. And like when she talks about like the lemmings, that she has like this secret thing with the lemmings and she puts them in her pockets and like brings them back and like gives them carrots and stuff. And like, I like definitely had like secret spots in like the fields and like the yards and stuff where it's like, oh, this is like my, and like in different people's places, like at my babysitter's house and like my grandma's house and like just different, like different places where I lived where it's like, oh, this is my secret place. Mm-hmm. And this is where I do like, fuck, whatever, like who, like, you know, and I play with like these little special rocks or whatever it is. And like, this is like the secret, like snake, like thing that like, anyway, just like weird, like kid stuff.
It's like at the end of the school year where you have to clean out your locker. My locker was always stuffed full of like grass clippings and like pine cones and sticks and stuff. And the teachers would always like look at me, what are you doing, girl? I don't know.
Yeah. I definitely like, I feel the relationships that she has with the land, how like the land can provide for us. And it's like, it's one of us. Like, we are kind of the embodiment of the land that we grew up on, and how also like it can provide, but it can be dangerous and like engulf us. Like when she's talking about the wind coming into her and it's so cold, I'm like, I've felt that before, like growing up in rural Alberta. Like I've been, you know, there during the beautiful days where it's just like you're so calm, but then there's also the times when, you know, the weather's reminding us that, you know, it's cold and you need to respect it.
Yeah. I'm here to fuck your shit up.
Yeah. But definitely the little hiding place though. I think we all had those, especially like small town kids. You all have like your place where, you know, you have to just get away from things. And I know mine was in the farmer field across from our house. There was a big open field, but then there was a dugout with trees all around it. And so we had like a little fort in the kind of treed area, but that's where we would go to not only like just hang out and do dumb kid stuff in the forest, but smoke cigarettes that we stole from my mushroom out of his van and kiss boys.
Ooh, you were a rebel. Holy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. If my parents were still alive, they'd be like, yeah, this is how the garage almost got burnt down that one time.
Yeah, I get ya. And then we had our little escape places in my friend's backyard. She had one, her fence, so it was a wood fence, and she had one board that was loose. So we always used to sneak out and of her yard and find this nearest tree grove and climb trees and hang out there. And then we'd get pissed off at each other and one of our friends would just go back home and tell on us. You know, we always had those experiences too.
Yeah. And as kids, it's like, you need that experience of like being in nature. And I think that's one thing that as an adult, especially moving like from a farm to downtown Vancouver, that I was missing for a while, just like being able to just leave and go into nature. And I mean, I'm fortunate enough to live close enough to Stanley Park that after work, if I need to, I can just like piss off and go run through the forest. But it's not the same as like, it's Stanley Park. It's busy. There's people there all the time. It's not like when I was on the farm and you wouldn't see people like all day and you could just go and no one would ever find you. So
yeah, true. So let's let's extend this question out a little bit because I want to talk about something. And so we talk a lot in Native studies anyways about human and more than human relationships. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you see it as human, non-human, but that's like, it's too much of a binary. We don't like to put ourselves in those kinds of boxes. So more than human is starting to catch on a lot more. So what happens when those relationships turn into sexual relationships? Because there was a lot of that in this book. Shapeshifters, Northern Lights. What did you two think about that?
Okay, so hold up. Like, I saw her perform in Edmonton, and I also saw her perform in Toronto too. But like, the Edmonton one was special because it was right at the release of Split Tooth. And I know the narrative around that time, she was like, some of it's real, some of it's fiction, some of it's like based on like me, some of it's based on like other things that other happened to other people. But when the Northern Lights comes down and like gets her pregnant or whatever, I'm like, I think this is fiction. Like, I'm like, what's happening? I don't call. Okay, I'm with you still, but I feel a little lost. So
it reminded me of another impregnation story that we all kind of know and out about around Christmas time. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking of. I'm like, wow, this is like the Virgin Mary.
Oh, that thing.
That thing.
Oh, yeah, that. Oh, I didn't get that at all. Oh, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I just, when I was reading that, I saw it more just that, like, you know, when you're having a sexual experience and sometimes it's just so, like, you have almost like an out-of-body experience where it's just so amazing. I saw the Northern Lights as being more like this embodiment of the individual, and this is the way that she sees that individual is like the Northern Lights and like glowing and beautiful and dancing different colors. And that's like the way that she envisions this individual, instead of saying like this dude was there or this person with the penis was there. Like, it makes it a lot more romantic than what it actually is for me.
See, I'm so like,
it's more beautiful.
Oh, I was like, oh, literally the Northern Lights? Like, I don't quite get that. Oh, it's a metaphor or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's definitely like it's such an interesting metaphor. And I think there's more spiritual components to it that, because I don't want to talk about this right now, but the children and the kinds of children that she was talking about, I think like her, I feel like there's a connection to her healing journey somewhere. And like, it's her and this, her spiritual connection, like her maybe being reconnected to nature to the spirits around her. And like, the children are manifestations of the self, like of who she is.
Yeah.
And her struggle with it, like moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, I got that, but somehow I still thought like, oh, literally the Northern Lights like came around and like did something.
I mean, you never know, like.
Right?
Like, maybe she whistled at them and they came down for her.
Right?
Maybe that's why our parents never told us to whistle, because it's something else happens.
You'll get pregnant.
Yo. You're going to get yourself pregnant, girl. Fuck. Oh, right. Man. Yeah. This is why I wasn't an English major, because I'm like, oh, that thing was a metaphor? Ooh, I didn't get that. Oh, damn it.
All right, let's take a pause here for a minute, because I feel like we're about halfway through the episode. We're talking a lot about different sexual things, and we did mention childhood abuse. So something that I like to do just to bring us back to the present is to take note of the senses and go through all of your senses about the stuff that's around you. So using your eyes, what do you see, hear, smell, taste? Did I get all of them? Mm. Or like, touch. You could even touch. touch. There you go. So sometimes, like, when you pay attention to the atmosphere that's around you, then it brings you back. So for me, I see my dirty room. My dirty room in the bed that I didn't make. I see my stuffed cow. And mm-hmm. I also see two beautiful faces on the screen. Three, including myself. Ooh.
You mean our, like, early morning faces still?
Yeah.
I our got beautiful coconut early oil morning in faces.
I got coconut oil in my hair. Sure.
How about you two? What are you tasting, Kayla?
Oh, coffee. Coffee is a staple. Coffee mm-hmm. with some coconut almond milk. So,
awesome. Yeah. Sheila, what can you touch that's around you?
So, right as I was plugging in and getting everything ready to record, I lived downtown, and so the church bells were going off, and I was like, "Ugh, can we stop that, please?" So that's done now. It's sunny. I got a cat asleep on the other chair. I got a huge mess because I've been making paper cats.
Let's see them.
Look at this. This is Alana.
Anyway, that's cute.
Anyway, it's like this paper cat making. Anyway, it's just like I've just been like looking at what do I have in my old craft stuff because it's boring being in a pandemic. And like, yeah, there's all these papers and everything around because it's like craft studio / podcast place, craft mm-hmm. place / podcast studio. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I also hear my kids in the next room. I don't know if they're playing Nintendo or something like that, but I can hear them having a good time. So there we go. All right. Did we miss any senses? I think we got most of them. Here, smell. What do you smell?
I don't know. Do I smell it? You know what? My house always smells like cinnamon apples. Like it's my favorite scent, and I'm sitting near my like diffuser, so it just always smells like pie in my house, which I actually love. Pie or like pine needles. I switch it up between like cinnamon apple or like pine, like really, really piney scent. But usually if you walk into my house, it's going to smell like a forest or someone's baking all day.
Oh, that's nice. My house usually smells like stinky children farts.
You know what?
Well, like
I've been on my own with just my cat for the last like couple months, and I was like used to the own smells, but now my husband's moved back in, like my partner, and I'm just like, smells like a man. It's like musky in here or something. I'm like, what is man this musk smell? I'm like not used to that. I'm like used to it smelling like cinnamon apples, and now I'm like, it smells like dude, like and not in a good way sometimes, like
oh man.
All right, we can unpause and return back to the conversation. Yeah.
We're grounded.
Where do we go from here? I definitely want to talk about these two children because holy moly, when I was listening to it at first over the summer, I got really obsessive about like empaths and narcissists, and I just went down the full rabbit hole of this. So it's like this one kid is a narcissist and this other kid is an empath and like all of these different things. And then I started thinking about what was his name? Savick
and Naya.
Yeah, I was thinking twins. Savick like had the Wendigo in him or something, and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with this kid? Keeps killing people or like draining people. It's like an energy vampire.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I could understand that metaphor with the children better than I could understand like the Northern Lights. Whatever. Whatever. I don't know. I was raised Catholic. I don't know. Like, I'm like, oh, it's a metaphor. I thought we were talking literally here.
We were literally drinking the blood of Christ.
Well, that's what I was told. I don't know.
Tastes good.
I was about to say, tasty.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know.
That's so weird. I always thought that was pretty cannibalistic.
Oh, it's so weird.
Eating the body and drinking the blood?
Yeah.
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 That's a side topic, though.
as an adult, when I grew up and like was like, oh, it's metaphors. Oh, well, I still didn't get that. But yeah, the children and like the help that she gets from Helen in like having these children, and like how everyone in the town assumes that they're busboys, like this guy that she works with, children. And yeah, like it's just so, and she doesn't explain because she can't explain. And like, I was like, yep, that is small communities for you. Everyone just assumes the truth anyway. So why talk about it, I guess. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Yeah. But like, I don't really get what the, like, there was like a whole journey that she goes on with these children. And like, I get that it's like kind of talking about herself and like a part of herself and like her healing. But then it, like, I would like to hear your thoughts because I feel like I don't know.
For me, okay, I will speak to my perspective as a mom here. So my kids and my daughter, especially, she's very sensitive. She's, she has a seizure condition. And I find that whenever I am stressed out or feeling more emotional, like sometimes if I'm going through a bout of depression, like I can see myself in her. Like she almost absorbs that energy and reflects it back to me. It's bizarre. Like if I'm feeling stressed, she'll actually have more seizures. Or if I'm feeling depressed, she'll start hitting herself, those types of things. Like children are sponges and they know what's going on and they're just, they have that raw energy and that special connection to their emotions that hasn't been distilled as you grow, right? So I think the kids were basically reflecting her own emotions, really. Like, mm-hmm. So Civic, when she ends up bringing him to the ice to try and kill him. Like, obviously it's easier to succumb to evil and darkness and shadows than it is to go to the light. Cause the light is harder work. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that was her trying to destroy the evil within her, but in trying to destroy the evil within her, instead of embracing it, she killed the good.
Mm-hmm.
And the evil was just left and survived.
Yeah, and like the way that she talks about how like Sivak can drain is like draining the life from her family members and they can't be around him. It just reminded me of, you know, when you're a teenager and you're going through the tough times and you're just like draining on your family and, you know, they try and help and be supportive for you. But it's like when you're just in your being your darkest self and just in those dark times as a teenager, or, you know, at any point when we get like that, that we do drain the people around us. And so just seeing like the children as the embodiment of her and her emotions. Yeah.
Totally. But that's when you're acting like that and lashing out and stuff like that. I find that at least with my own kids, when they're doing stuff and they're lashing out like that, I guess. Here, I'm trying to think of how to word this in my brain. But when they're lashing out, it's not always a surface level thing. It's something that's deeper, right? And it tends to always be like, I'm feeling sick, so it's harder to manage my emotions, right? So when you can't manage your emotions, like it's so easy for you as a parent to just get angry, right? But that's not what you're... at least in my parenting experience, in my parenting philosophies, like when kids are acting like that, they need more love. Like they're in need of more care. Like they're almost craving that motherly or fatherly or whatever kind of attention, right? Because I know that that's what it was like when me and my sister were kids. But we were just expressing that need in different ways.
Yeah, like I don't have kids. I can only think towards my own like personal experience of like growing up and even seeing like Eric's sisters grow up when they were younger, or like my niece now. But I know just, yeah, those emotions that you have when you're a teenager, and sometimes like you don't even know where they're coming from. It's just like they manifest, and it's just like, I know for me there was just days where, you know, I'd be totally okay and having good times, and then all of a sudden it would just be like the inner like teenager monster came out, and it's like, don't cross me, because it will, like, you know that that show Big Mouth, when she's has the hormone monster and she's like, you just want to yell and call your mom by her first name. Like, when it just like manifests and you're like eyes get all funny and you're just like, go away. And everyone's like, oh my God, how do I fix this? But it's just like those teenager emotions. Yeah. Oh, I was such a shithead as like a teenager.
But it's hard to manage your emotions as a teenager.
It is.
And rhythm is so different. Like, teenagers actually need a lot of sleep. It's harder for them to wake up in the morning than it is for a small child, right? So they're going to school earlier than they are in elementary school. So they're tired. Their hormones are going crazy. Like, yeah, it's a lot. Being a teenager is a lot.
It's a very transformative time too when you're a teenager. Like, not saying that our lives aren't transformative, but I know a lot of the growing that I did and experiencing the first that happened to people was as a teenager, when your brain is still like, you know, developing and figuring things out. So, you know, those first with like romantic partnerships, or like the first time, you know, you try a drink or that kind of stuff, is always when you're a teenager and you're already emotional. So like, you know,
chaos.
Yeah, exactly. So
can we sneak in one last listener question?
I think we can.
Sure.
Yep. Okay, perfect. So this one asks, why do we think that most of the characters are nameless in this story?
Well, I think it adds to like the what is fiction, what is not, and like the anonymity. Like, if you're writing about a small place, like, I don't think it's possible to be like, and this motherfucker, you know, and like, this is his last name and this is where he lives, and like, you know, he did this, you know, like, I don't think that's possible to do and then still have community ties. And then like, also like, maybe a lot of the characters are combinations of like a couple different people. That's what I think. I don't know.
Yeah. And like, the story is very personal to her as well. And I think taking that, you know, when you actually give names to people, that gives them more power or prominence within the story. And so I think by calling somebody by like, you know, features or something that they were wearing, something like that, it gives them a little bit less power within the story, but also makes them memorable. And I think, you know, we all, and also for me, like, if I was writing this, it would be people that I maybe, you know, remember them from elementary school, but can't exactly remember their name either. But I remember something about them. Like, they always pick their nose or something. Like, they were the high school kid that picked their nose. Like, I would literally call them something like that in the book, like the nose picker. Because I'm old and can't remember people's names anymore. So,
yeah.
But also, do they really need a name?
Yeah. Well, and I think it speaks to also like trauma, you know, like, we remember, it's like, that fucking kid, like, you know, he did this to me. Like, I can tell you about situations in my life where I'm like, this kid, you know, but like, what's the kid's name? I don't know. But like, do I remember the way I felt after? Yes, 5,000%. But
yeah. Oh, I know. I always do that to my friend Abby. I'm like, that fucking kid, what was his name? I don't even care. He was an idiot. Like, just like going off. She's like, yeah. But then normally she's like, I don't remember the story happening that way, Kayla. Like,
perception is everything.
Like, are you sure? I have the receipts.
Yeah, pretty much.
Show me the receipts. I think that's so funny. But for, I have a completely different perspective on this. So for me, I think she left out the names so that you could, so it would be easier for you to put yourself in that narrator role. Right? So you could see yourself more as the main character. And holy crap, when you insert yourself in a story, there's more emotional punch to it. Right?
Yeah.
And this was a heart-wrenching story. And it sheds a lot of light onto, like, I don't know. I don't know too much about this, so I'd hate to assume, but it sheds light on what Inuit culture could be like or can be like.
Mm.
And that can be a huge culture shock to some people. So they pay more attention to it because there's no names, because my uncle could be literally my uncle, you know? I'm all about that emotional punch.
Yes. Yes, you are.
Emotions. It's because I can't manage my own. I'm a Cancer.
As your astrological sign, not like literally you're a Cancer.
Oh, no. Yeah. Like, well, sometimes I can be. Let's be real.
Holy.
Be a bit of a shit.
Tanya. Oh, I was like, maybe we should clarify that. Your birthday is in July. You're fine.
My birthday's in July. All right. Any last thoughts, concerns, questions about the book?
I think it's an important work. I think we don't understand a lot about the North, and this is one glance into it. And I think like representation really matters, and like representing her ideas of like how things were for her and like those around her, and like the blurry line between fiction and non and human and non and human and more and like the earth and like dark and light, like it's just like such things that we take for granted in the South. And I think it's an important, like, it's an important gut punch to go on. So
yeah,
I think you should read it.
I agree. I think that this is an important book, and I, especially because of the trauma that's talked about and discussed in the way that it's discussed. Like you said, it's, you're questioning whether this is fact or fiction the whole time. But as someone who has PTSD, that's your life, right? You're always wondering, okay, is this reality, or is this like, is this real, or is this fake? I often call my sister to have those conversations, right? And that's kind of reinvigorating in her healing journey. Like that's what this was to me, is it was a healing journey and kind of like trying to embrace darker sides of yourself and what that takes. Kayla, thoughts, concerns?
I really, really appreciated this book. And like you said, there is such a disconnect between the North and the South. And I think, you know, reading the book is great. Listening to her actually narrate the book, and as the chapters are transitioning, singing and also like throat singing at the same time, is absolutely gorgeous. And you're getting that experience of Northern, you know, culture and tradition. And it was absolutely fabulous. And I am so glad that we chose it as our first book. So
for me, when I get triggered, and this is something that I do at the end of every therapy session for myself, is to think of a container, any sort of container. It could be like a chest, it could be a Tupperware container, whatever. That's where you want to put all of that bad stuff, those bad memories and stuff like that, in the container. Put it on a shelf, storage closet in your mind, because it's hard to go through life really being triggered all the time and thinking about all this stuff all the time. So doing an exercise like this can actually, you know what, it's there for later, and I will access it when I need it. So after you put your stuff in the box, I usually think about my happy place, or I call it the quote unquote happy place. It's the happy thought, like in Peter Pan. You know, it's something to put a smile on your face at the end of a traumatic experience, or at the end of like being triggered, so it can pull you out of that dark, shadowy place. So for me, I always like to think about snuggling up with my two beautiful ginger babies in bed in the morning, and they're like bouncing and stomping all over my body, and my partner obviously is there too, so that's always really fun, and just snuggling up to them and kissing them on their heads. So that always cheers me up and puts a smile right on my face. How about you two? Do you have a happy place?
I have a happy place.
It's my old nail salon in Toronto. Like, it's literally my happy place. Shout out to Kim's Nails, Queen and Dufferin. I miss it. Oh my God. Like, when you walk in the door and it's like, hi, honey.
Oh,
yeah. How are you? Nice. Pick a color. Yes. Like, oh my God. Yes, I'm back. I'm special. And it's like, no, bitch, you're not special. But they treat you like you are. And they're like, you know, just talking. And like, I would always go there with my other friend, Sarah. And just like, oh, fuck, I miss that. And it's just like, this is like a femme space. And it's just like, you know, and like POC business, like we're running this shit and they're busy and they do a good job. So that's my happy place. Like, it's literally a place.
Pre-pandemic times, my happy place was probably getting tattooed. Something I like to do for myself, especially, you know, in times of need or in times when I'm just like, I just feel like putting something new on my body. So, I mean, haven't been tattooed in a while just because, you know, we're in the pandemic. So yeah, I miss seeing Matt at Long Cat Matt Tattoos, which is in Pitch Black Tattoos in Kelowna. I miss going there and getting some new ink. But right now my happy place is anywhere my fat little Spudly cat is, my baby. He's looking at me right now like, you still have my toy. He's giving me the stink eye. Yeah. And where my fat fur baby is. So
yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thanks for asking.
All right. Now we can do all the sign off stuff.
Yes. Okay. All right. So let's keep the conversation going. We really want to hear what you think too. So you can tweet at us at Book Women Podcast. Use our hashtag Book Women, hashtag Book Women Podcast. Slide into our email inbox. It's bookwomenpodcast@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on our website, bookwomenpodcast.ca. Basically, find us on the internet and let us know what you think. Maybe you thought something totally different. Maybe you thought we were trash. Let us know. It's fine. And we have some books to give away. So if we let us know and we will get something to you.
Yeah, we got some books. We got some other swag. And our next episode will focus on picture books, which is going to be awesome. So on February 23rd, we will be talking about What's My Superpower by Aviak Johnson, LCP and Her Baby Seagull by Nancy Mike, and The Walrus Who Escaped by Rachel Kitzlack-Tinsley and Sean Kitzlack-Tinsley. So that's going to be exciting. I have not read a children's picture book in like forever. So I'm really excited. And also we should thank our sponsors.
Thank you to our sponsors, ILSA, the Indigenous Literary Studies Association, ACUTE, Association of Canadian College and University Teachers of English. And last but not least, thank you, SHRC, the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council. Thank you for funding our season 3.
Yeah, thanks, y'all. And so with that, that is the end of our very first book club episode where we're actually doing reading and not just talking to each other. So we will see you next time. Hi, thank you. I hope y'all have a great day. And with that, goodbye.